John with Drew and Leslie. Get the shit on. Interracial John. Shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John. Interracial John. Interracial shit motherfuckers. Shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie. Interracial John.
Hi, and welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by this guy, very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. What's going on, dude?
Yeah, it's been fucking just this Mercury retrograde.
You and this Mercury retrograde is hilarious.
No, it's not even this Mercury. Like, they say, like, don't make financial decisions, do this, do that, whatever. But, like,
I thought it was, like, mechanical stuff or, like,
well, I'm
electronic
not sure
things.
I'm sure it's all coincidence because it's in retrograde, like, six times a year, whatever. But so, have we talked about mom's website on the podcast yet?
I don't believe so. No.
So
let me get through the housekeeping.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Before you jump into all of that, I was just asking how you were doing.
Well, I'm doing not as fantastic as I'd like because all this fuck ass shit that I'm dealing with because of Mercury. But we'll get to it.
Oh, okay. Well, if this is your first time joining us, welcome.
Thank
you can
you.
Find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's JAWN. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John. Again, JAWN. And we love feedback. And you can leave us feedback a number of ways. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, which we really appreciate. And if it's 5 stars, we will read it here on the air. You can also email us at interracialjohn@gmail.com. We'll also read that on the air. And easiest of all, you can pick up your phone and dial 657-JOHN, or that's 657-JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we will play it here on the air. Shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Yahoo Tips for our general feedback rules. And I think we have some...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit.
It's been a little while. It's been a hot minute.
One, two, three, four, ain't got shit. 5 stars.
5 stars.
Five
ain't
stars.
Got shit. Man.
All right,
ain't
sweet. So let's get into them.
We,
yeah.
We do. We got a couple here. Let me
cool.
Zoom it in here because these iTunes did some crazy shit to me. Anyway, so this first one is from LaShonda back on March. And she said, great podcast from powerful activists. And LaShonda says, I heard about you from Rod and Karen, of course, the Black Guy Who Tips.
Yay.
And have been listening for several months. Please forgive me for taking so long to let you know you have another devoted listener.
Oh my God, 15.
I said 14.
Huzzah.
Or over a baker's dozen. I love your interactions and you examine current social, political, and cultural issues. I also appreciate the work you do for marginalized communities. If you ever need a stop over during a visit to the DMV while engaged in your work, the door to my home is always open to you. Stay strong. And I look forward to hearing from you all, from you too. I'm going
to
say this.
People need to stop.
Yeah.
Inviting us to their houses.
You don't know us.
Because we will show up at your door. Ding dong. What's up? Thank you so much, LaShonda, for giving us a review.
We'll be the kind of show up that, like, we'll be like 2 days before we're there, like, oh, hey, by the way, we're going to come for like 9 days. Is it cool? We're bringing 2 dogs, a rooster, and a parakeet. Is that all right? But we had a couple other more reviews that we hadn't got to.
Oh, my.
Behind.
This is exciting.
My new favorite show by BlackStee99.
Ooh.
I love the show. I look forward to a new show. Keep up the good work. Love y'all.
Aw, thanks.
And then another one, JSmooth12, just wrote smiley face.
Smiley face. We'll take it. 5 stars is 5 stars. Thank you all for leaving those reviews. We really appreciate it.
I'm going to have to say that's the Black Yahoo Tips review bump, right? Whenever Rod and Karen.
Oh, yeah.
The Black Yahoo Tips, like, their audience knows, like, you got to leave a review. That's how motherfucking, that's the like, that's the chit. That's what you do. That's the exchange, right? Yeah. You either go premium or you fucking leave a review.
Yeah. Leave a review, people. And also go premium with the Black O tips because it's well worth it. So just catching up with you. So you wanted to talk about mom's website or what were you talking about now?
She got, this sounds really crazy, but so my mother has a business. I don't want to like divulge her business.
Nope,
or
don't need to do that.
But it's a like a service that she provides, like a professional service, and she does well. She makes some money and she's, you know, a little bit elderly. I'm not going to again say how old she is, but she's, you know, I'm impressed that she's had this business and she does well, and she gets, you know, leads and referrals and clients and so forth and so on. And she had, with this business, provided some services to an individual that in return, they kind of traded like some barter, gave her some like web kind of stuff, right? So her business had for a while a front-facing website that was, I think she referred to it as a game of 52 card pickup. Just like random thoughts. It was like, bleh. You know, like it was like Winston Churchill quotes followed by like other things. They might still be up there. But anyway, so she had this site, and it wasn't anything great, nothing fancy, but she did well. It had good organic search. She was getting like, you know, media and has business. And it was being hosted by a content management system with this, I'll call this person the kid, right? So the kid out west was hosting it with Drupal. And I was doing it using a virtual machine, like kind of in his home, right? Like doing all the hosting and all the stuff himself. And as best I can surmise, the kid did not update the back end of Drupal. Like, you know, there's like version 3 and then right. Like version 4 and sure. 5. So one of these versions had a vulnerability that the kid didn't back up. And so she got hacked. My mom got hacked. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you know, it's like weird. Like, why would they hack her? Like, her website was like static, like kind of like lead generation. There's no credit cards. There's no like, database, nothing. There's nothing you could steal. So it got hacked by, of all things, ISIS, the Islamic State, and an individual named Kalashnikov, a hacker. And my mom was like, why would they hack me? Why would they hack me? And she must have just been like the vertices, right? The Venn diagram of like, how many websites are stupid enough to still be running version 3
right.
of Drupal?
Right, they go to who's most vulnerable, and she was vulnerable because this Drupal update wasn't
correct. And I think there's a, you know, you don't hit and hack every vulnerable site. You hack the vulnerable sites. The other Venn diagram is like, how much traffic are they getting, right? It's like, oh, this site's vulnerable, and it's, you know, it's just big enough that we're going to hack it and do some shit. But it like, it didn't just hack her. Like, they took her homepage over, and it had like images of like, rifle of like jihadists, and it said like death to like, you know, America, like raping women and shit. Like, it was really kind of weird. Like that, like mom calls me like, I got hacked by ISIS. Like, come on, you're fucking kidding me. That's not true. So that was like, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago. It was a little while ago. And we've been dealing with all the stuff that has come from that, and we're moving it to a new Squarespace site, and you built her a great looking website. It looks awesome. And we're doing a bunch of stuff to kind of make her life, you know, easier. But because she's like, you know, like, I'm not going to say, how do I describe this? She uses AOL, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, that should be enough.
That's it. She uses AOL. So like setting up her Outlook email client was just like, fuck me, man, this is really, and like, she didn't quite understand that there was like two different accounts under the same Outlook. Like, you can see AOL, you can also see Gmail, and we had to hook up her kind of private domain and stuff. But it's just, it's been a long, long couple of weeks. And then during that whole time, I'm trying to set up my own computer, and you've been, I don't say like mean to me about it, but kind of throwing shit at me for trying to set my computer up.
Well, I think you've just been like, I don't know. I'm a Mac user, so I am used to plugging my computer in and, you know, it working. So it's a little odd to me that you've had the computer for more than a week now and still, in your opinion, it's not fully functioning.
I got it. No, it was. Whatever. Listen. Whatever. Stop. Just stop. Like, I'll admit.
That's just why it's weird.
And it is a little bit weird. And I think that, like, the things that like Windows as a program does and like what you can do with it and like the bugs and shit is weird to start with. But mm-hmm. So what I have my day job
yes.
Has a very specific requirement, some things that I do that are pretty intensive on the computing side. In fact, the one thing I do, I used to outsource to another, like I used to pay somebody like, you know, $60,000 a year to do it, and now I can do it from like my own computer because the technology's gotten good enough that I can do that.
Of course, yeah.
But you know, you got to kind of have a nice machine. You got to have a, you know. So this is I'm a salesperson. I needed it, right? But I'm playing my cards right so that when it came time, like, you know, the boss was like, oh yeah, let's get you a new computer. And I thought like, you know, hey, we're gonna spend this. He starts like you know, the budget was like, whoa, like, you know, he's going to build me a Ferrari. Like for a desktop computer, like, it's a fucking battle station. You know, it's awesome. It's right. super fast. But it's, if you buy a Ferrari, and then because it's Windows, and like, I'm talking like, you know, half a gig solid state drive, 48 gigabyte RAM, dual, you know, like hexa core processors, all this shit, right? But if you don't, put it all together, like, I don't want to say properly, but like, it specifically using a solid state drive and a spinning hard drive in tandem, you got to have all of your boot stuff, all of your software, all of your programs on the solid state drive, and then kind of your media and other things on the hard drive. And Windows does some weird fucking partition shit, and it put it on the wrong, when I had this custom built, they did it wrong.
This is like, nobody gives a damn about this.
It's been a long fucking week. It's trying to do all this shit for my mom, remote into her desktop. I'm just tired. Tired okay. of fucking with technology.
I mean,
technology.
I had to literally recreate her entire website, so...
Yeah, but that was easier. That's fucking text.
Like, wasn't just text. Oh my gosh, Drew. I can't believe you just said that to me. You know what? Let's move on.
I'm saying building her website in a WYSIWYG editor is point and click.
Sure, it was point and click. Anyways, I'll remember that. So any issue she might have with the website, I'll direct her to you since it's super easy.
I don't have the login. That's you.
It's actually your login. So.
I know, but you're the one that built the site. You did all that.
What does that have to do with anything? It's so easy, it doesn't matter.
I don't even use that back end.
But it's so easy, so you'll be able to.
Yeah, but you can do it.
You'll be able to do it perfectly.
Listen, you built her entire website in about an hour, so don't tell me.
I didn't build it in an hour, but
you
whatever.
Did too. You had the first draft in like an hour and a half. Didn't take that long. And then you've been working with her. I understand you've spent time, but it's not bullshit Windows. Trust me. You don't use Windows.
You're right. There's a reason for that. Yeah. Anyways, last weekend we went to see The Read live in Chicago. And shout out to all of the Black Guy Who Tips listeners that met us up for dinner. We had really good Jamaican food before the show and got to see the show. What did you think of it?
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
It was nice seeing Carl, the O'Johner.
That's right. The O'Johner was in the house.
In the hizzy.
Yes. So that was nice to see him. And...
it was good. There was a couple of things that just like... I don't want to... Is it a spoiler alert? Like, and I don't know what... makes it into the podcast. If
I don't think this one will be in the podcast.
You don't think it was good enough to make the podcast?
I don't think that they do all their live shows as a podcast. I don't think so.
Well, so during the Q&A part, there was just a couple different people that were like, good Lord, they're making me laugh. The young man that stood up and takes the mic and starts just rambling for like a bunch of time and starts trying to like say he's a rapper. He's trying to like push his mixtape and he's like, oh, follow me on Snapchat. And then starts spelling his like his name. It was like
his Snapchat was so long.
It was like LILWIZAR_901. It's like, what in the like, damn, dude. So he's up there for a long ass time. And Crystal and Kayfer were just like, I don't know if they were like cracking him, but they're kind of worried. Like, all right, come on, man, get your grind on. Let's go. You know, keep it moving, keep it light. And then like we're doing, that was the beginning of Q&A, like, and he worked at the theater, this young man did. 20 minutes later, we're about maybe like 5 minutes, last question, he comes out and starts handing out fucking like
literally
his tapes and shit, and Chris was just like, stop right now. I couldn't believe it. I was
stop
like,
what you're doing right
some
now
giant brass balls, but hey, yeah. You gotta get your that's the hustle. You got to do what you got to do.
Anyways, I thought it was a good show. It was fun. And
I thought it was hilarious.
It was cool to see it live. I know that when we did the Black Podcast Week and I asked, I think the last question I had is like, what are your plans, you know, next plans for your podcast? And Rod from Black Guy Who Tips mentioned that they hope to do a live show. And I hope that they do. I think they would be so good live.
Cool.
So sweet. But what I found was funny is that it's notorious that people bring Crystal and Kid Fury weed at their shows.
Oh, yeah. And multiple people did.
This happens like every time they do a live show, it just happens all the time. And this was no different. One gentleman took it to literally just hand her like a fat sack of weed right on the stage.
Yeah.
She had to like throw it behind her in the chair, was like, you should have been a little more discreet about that, sir, but good on you.
And listen, I'm no stranger to the odoriferous nature of marijuana.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so wait, so let's talk about my question. So I actually got to ask a question and I wanted to be funny and just kind of cool. So I asked Kid Fury's always going on about how he's really sensitive to smell. So I said, well, you know,
especially bad smell.
Yeah, bad smell. So I was like, oh, you know, if you had to have a signature scent that was yours, you know, what would it be? And I said, just to give you an example, if I had to give a signature scent to the Reed Live Chicago, it would be shea butter and really good weed, because yeah, it was odoriferous in there.
And let's just clarify,
it wasn't like people smoked
weed. Yeah, no, it was like fresh buds.
Yes,
yeah,
it was obscene.
Like it smelled like somebody brought in like a 6 foot OG Kush brush.
Yes, like,
it was like
everybody was just
fuck?
Everybody was carrying. It was ridiculous.
Anyways, and like I said, I'm not you know, I'm not a stranger to the smelling of weed, but like, for it to be that odoriferous, one of two things: either like a few people just like sprinkled it on the floor, or everybody had it.
Yeah, I think everyone had it.
Like it's like,
because I
every
think because I think it's like, oh, what if there's an opportunity to like talk to them in private, or I could just imagine lots of reasons why I'd be like, well, I'll just take some with me, like yeah, just to have some. Anyways, I thought it was funny.
So I've been having this Metrograde. That's my new portmanteau.
Metrograde,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Mercury retrograde. And I don't know if you want to talk about the I put on the notes the potential solidarity statement.
What's that?
The email you got for the person asking.
I didn't get the email. It was passed on to me from somebody else, but it was quite hilarious because I'm always talking about like fuck
the
shit
work.
Fuck shit statements. People are just like, oh, we're going to make a public statement. And for what purpose? Like, is there a reason? Is there an ask in it? Like, what's your, like, just saying something to say you said it? I see like no value in that whatsoever.
And the problem is that is like part and parcel of our religion.
That's
like UUism's like,
not
we're going to
UUism.
We're going to say it.
Especially
we're gonna,
white people. It's like, right. Oh.
No, action. They've got literally, there's a.
I have to get my opinions out.
And
you do?
Action of immediate witness. There's a call to act. Like, there's like seven different ways of saying we're going to just say something. You know what I mean?
Actually,
like,
all of those things are not supposed to just be saying something.
Oh, well, that's the execution. But see, so the thing you got was somebody that was like, oh, you know, we want to do something. And will the black people look at it? Like, we need
literally,
to, we need
is,
accountability.
Which is something
we need accountability.
Black Lives are UU. We've been dealing with that. In fact, I actually had this on
should
the notes about that, about just, you know, we're Unitarian Universalists. There's been a lot of fuck shit stuff that's been going on within our faith and outside of it. And so after the convening last year, a bunch of us, well, five of us, formed this new organizing collective called Black Lives of UU. And it's starting to take a little bit more shape. And we're doing some really big things at General Assembly this year. But of course, as we've started doing more stuff, like people have started requesting things from us. And
I want to do something.
So this is the sentence. It says, the blank has made this, here we go, rough draft as a potential solidarity statement.
Just, like how many more like
how many almost
maybe,
not
kinda,
saying something
I might you, I, you know, I'm not sure, I might maybe have a rough draft of something that could possibly maybe at some point end up as a kind of roundabout solidarity statement. Is that cool?
Yeah,
you got time to look at that?
Yeah. So it's been interesting. Anyways, the work's been really enjoyable because I love the Black UUs that I'm working with, and I'm really excited about GA because we're going to get to talk about lots of cool stuff, and we're actually going to be going to Denver. Shout out to Denver. In a few weeks for me to, we're going to have a meeting
shit.
There.
Oh, shit. Don't tell Elizabeth.
Oh, I'll let Elizabeth know. We'll have to definitely see her.
She got all kind of
so she won't be upset
wrangled that you weren't there.
Last time.
The lesser John showed up.
The lesser John. Anyways, but, yeah. What else did you have before we...
Well, I had two different kind of interactions. Mm-hmm. One was... So all this computer horseshit has been horseshit, but the bottom of the problem is Microsoft and Google, they're just not wanting to play together. They're trying to close their own loop. Yeah. Microsoft's got Office 365, the cloud shit. Google's got, you know, Docs, Gmail, stuff. And I actually, the fault on this lies on Google. They discontinued the RSS feed of their calendar, so you can't have two-way read-write on multiple calendars under two different accounts. Mm-hmm. And they discontinued the Google Apps Sync, right? So a bunch of shit was like, damn, this is kind of fucking me up. And I was looking for solutions, and somebody had said, or I saw a forum, was like, oh, Plaxo, P-L-A-X-O. And I'm going to say it because I don't want you to ever have any interaction with them ever again, P-L-A-X-O. And I thought, oh, this could be something. Maybe it'll work. And they have their website's all kind of looking good, fancy, and it's doing all this integration shit. And then it's like the Outlook toolbar. Download this toolbar. In order to download the Outlook toolbar, you got to upgrade to this premium product that's $4.95 a month, and we'll give you a free month for free, right? You get 1 month for free. Mm-hmm. And you know, then we'll do this thing. I was like, all right, fine, whatever. And like most free trials, you got to put in a credit card, so forth and so on. And I didn't think, you know, maybe shame on me, I didn't read the multitude of terms and conditions and whatnot, but a couple of days go by, I figure it out, install the thing. Nope, this doesn't solve my solution. It's only view only. I can't write to these calendars that I want. So I uninstall it and fucking, you know, make a note in my task list, like, okay, go unsubscribe from this free trial before your 30 days. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to get charged.
Right. You want to cancel it and I'm sure not be stuck in the like, oh shit, I wasted that money for that month.
Half the first month people that buy a membership is because they forgot to deactivate their trial. Yeah. Right. So I go on their website and I think I even told you, like, what the fuck? I can't find anywhere to cancel my subscription. Like, they even have an area that's like my subscriptions. You click on my subscriptions and it shows you your subscription, but nothing else. No, like, cancel, no edit, no fucking do any of this shit. And I'm like, this is kind of crazy. So I left it again, like, you know, wasted 10 minutes, whatever. Came back at some point the next day. I'm like, you know what? Let me go back and maybe I'm, you know, clear headed and I'm going to find it. Still can't find it. So I contact their support. They've got like a couple different ways. And one of them's a chat window, like on the website, like, here, chat with support. So I click it and I'm like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And someone named June Ray is like, you know, hi, Drew, please, can you help me? And I say, you know, hi, June Ray, can you please help cancel my subscription? I'm going to read this line by line, the customer service interaction. Mm-hmm. Can you please help cancel my subscription? This is June Ray now. I understand that you want to cancel auto renewal of your account. I'm happy to assist you with that. May I have your email address that you registered with Plaxo? Great. Here it is. June Ray, thank you. I said, and then June Ray says, anyway, first of all, first sentence, you want to cancel auto renewal. I'm happy to assist you with that. May I have your email address? Very next sentence. Our site doesn't have a feature to cancel auto renewal for security purposes.
What?
Like, what? So it says, please bear with me while I check your account. And I was like, wait a minute. You have no way to cancel auto renewal? That's not a security measure. That's a nuisance. Like, that's not at all security. That's like an irritation. So June Ray comes back and says, I apologize for the inconvenience this has caused you. May I know the reason why you want to cancel your auto renewal? And I just said, I'm still waiting confirmation that my auto renewal will be canceled. The reason is I do not wish to use Plaxo service anymore. It did not solve my issues syncing Outlook with Gmail. June Ray, I'm still checking your account. If you want, we can try to sync your Outlook and Gmail before we proceed to cancellation. Me. So you're not going to do what I've asked plainly and simply to cancel my account, but you're going to ask me to cancel my account. This is unacceptable. I want to cancel my account, period. June Wright, back. Please. And I wrote back, please. The next thing you send should be, I have canceled your auto renew subscription and this is confirmation number. June Wright says, I pulled up your account. I'm still waiting confirmation. And then June Wright says, what am I going to do? What I'm going to do is escalate this to our billing department for cancellation. And I said, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. I want to cancel auto renewal. And I said, this is how it goes. I have to contact the support and then you have to escalate that billing. June Ray says, yes, this is the only thing I can do. And I said, so you're in support and you're telling me that there's no way to cancel my account due to security, yet the Plaxo support can't even do it for me. This is unbelievable. This goes on for like, this is like 20 minutes, this chat. And says, I'm going to escalate. Keep saying all this stuff. I'm like, well, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean I'm going to escalate it? I'm going to escalate the billing. What does that mean? Finally says, well, it might take up to 24 hours. I says, okay, so to be clear, you have not been able to help me at all. And the answer to the escalation is I have to wait 24 hours? Wow, is this a solution to cancel a subscription? This just can't be right. It almost seems illegal. And then there's a couple other interactions. I said, listen, Janae, please understand. I'm not, you know, mad at you. I think you might be a wonderful person, but this is unbelievable. I don't know you. You might be a wonderful person, but it's like unbelievable. It was 20 minutes, and they couldn't even. I felt like that AOL guy, like, cancel my subscription or CompuServe, whatever it was. But it was just fucking absolutely ridiculous. So there was more, and this is maybe going back a little bit, but someone on Facebook had a post from, I guess it was the Behind the Blue Line Minnesota group. Have you heard of this at all?
Nope.
So it's a, and I'm not going to give them any more juice, but it was a website, and they had a project that's purporting to take photos and record stories, oral history of ostensibly black individuals that have interactions with police in Minnesota, and they're calling it Behind the Blue Line. Okay. And it's, you know, okay, maybe, all right. The two women behind the project are white, and they have a spot to donate. You know, they're trying to raise like $15,000 to be able to do this project. And I kind of...
Where is this at?
It's online. I'll find it.
No, I'm saying what city?
Minneapolis.
And no, there's nobody else already doing this? Just asking.
Yeah, you could talk to Kimmy Levy Pounds and NCAA.
So there are people doing this.
No, I don't know. I'm just saying there are people there. But anyway, so I...
No, I was just asking if there's other projects. I mean, it just seems like somebody probably already... Look, I'll put it this way. It's been my experience that we're in this city that has frequent issues with police, that there's already mechanisms either via Black-led organizations, or certainly through organizers that, you know, artivists and things like that, that are already certainly, if not in the midst, have the capacity to collect stories of people's interactions.
And I'll say, as a white person working in this space, one of the things that was the, not the hardest, but took me a while to kind of like disavow myself of, is this sort of like notion that like, oh, I can do that. I can be helpful here. I know what to do. You know, like, well, no one asked these two women to do this project. But anyway, the issue I had was raising money. It's like, you know, you could do this thing, but you're asking people like $15,000 to like, I don't know. So I wrote, they have a website and a forum, and I used my real name and was kind of polite. And I'll read what I wrote and then what they wrote back. I said, I laud your efforts and I'm certain your heart is in the right place. However, please consider the historical context and history of white people's appropriation of blackness. From the beginning of time, white folk have taken things from black people. We have taken their work and called it our own. We have taken their labor for our own. We have taken their music and repackaged it to sell to white people. The list goes on and on. In that context, I hope that you can see some of the problematic optics in a group of ostensibly white folks raising money to tell the stories that are largely those of black people. Again, I understand your goals are to amplify and lift up the voices of the marginalized and oppressed. You could do that by sharing those existing stories and content that is already published by black people rather than repackaging them. There's also the very likely possibility that the framing, presentation, and other aspects of this project may be impacted by the white gaze. This is a subtle and conscious way in which media and content is shaped by whiteness, usually as a function of having mostly white individuals involved. Mm-hmm. Again, this is not a knock or a terrible thing, it's just reality. But I hope that you would consider the historical context and the possibility that the stories of black people being repackaged under the white gaze is likely to upset, bother, or offend some black people. And I know that's not your goal, but that could be the outcome I'm concerned you have not fully appreciated and considered. With respect, Drew. So it was a while. It was like maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks before they wrote back. I thought I wouldn't get anything. And they did. Finally wrote back. And here's the response. Hi, Drew. Thanks for your thoughtful feedback. We've gotten a few emails along these lines, so we're likely going to be making a blog post about this in the next few weeks that will address some of the points you raised more directly than I will in this email. For now, I'll just say that the many people of color who have shared and intended to share stories for this project feel very differently. I trust their perspective over that of a white person. To imply that they don't have enough awareness of white supremacy to decide appropriate venues for their stories is, in my opinion, far more problematic than any component of our project. I even asked you and a couple other people, Mike, did I in anything in my response suggest that black people don't have the agency to decide what and where? Like, that didn't come out my fucking lips at all.
They're just trying to like make themselves seem like they know whatever the fuck. I can't. I'm not even going to discuss it.
There's nothing to discuss. It's just fucking ridiculous.
And I think you said it was like a form letter. They sent it to anybody who said something. They said the same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I posted it. That part I thought
was particularly interesting, because then you shouldn't even be asking the question, like, did I say that? Because it doesn't matter what you said.
Right.
They were going to say it regardless.
I think when I asked that was, I think I asked it, and then somebody, he's like, no, that's not what you said. And someone's like, no, this is a form letter. I got the same fucking thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But fuck people, man. Honest to God. What are you going to do? You ready to do some news?
Yeah, let's do it.
The news is coming on. The news is. Come on.
So I have this on my list, but I didn't really get to the article yet. Man claiming to be from the future.
Yes.
Is accused of assaulting an Arby's employee stealing chicken and bacon.
Mm-hmm. Dante Rashad Anderson. This is in Oklahoma City.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he reportedly claims to be from 4 years in the future. Yep. I'm just going to stop right here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're from the future, why only 4 years? Like, I guess that's a reasonable, like...
Look, the more important question is, if you're from the future, why would you go to Arby's?
And steal chicken. I don't know.
No, just period.
But like, I guess, like, but if you're going to say you're from the future, like, 2 weeks from the future, like, you'd look exactly like... Your style would be the same. So 4 years is pretty reasonable.
Right. I guess.
Oh, 4 years in the future everyone is dead.
Everyone's dead, he says.
He was arrested after assaulting a fast food employee and stealing chicken and bacon.
Mm-hmm. Guess the race.
Dante is accused of walking into Carl's Jr. and screaming at employees to give him food before being turned away. Then allegedly turned to a nearby Arby's demanding food there as well. Employees at Arby's told police that Anderson jumped on top of the counter, jumped off before walking to the kitchen, grabbing her by the arms and forcing her against the wall, then grabbed a handful of chicken and bacon and walked out. As he left, he reportedly broke the restaurant's front door, although it is not known
how he managed that. That's
he's from the future. He's got that quake shit that fucking, what's his name?
Yeah, but he obviously is having a mental break, obviously. Yeah. You know, he had bacon in his hand, walking out in the middle of the intersection, kicking people's cars. And he told police, this is a quote from him, quote, "I got bacon and chicken and I scared the lady. She thought I was going to hurt her, but I was not. I was just hungry and wanted some food. That's what I have to do to get food. I knew I was going to jail for doing this, but no one wants to help me out."
Oh, he is having
he says, "I'm having, I'm 4 years advanced on you. You guys are always trying to kill me on my planet Earth. Everyone is dead and I walked here from there."
Yeah, he's having a
so hopefully,
issue.
Yeah, hopefully. But the thing is, and you see this, he was taken to a hospital to have his ankle looked at, but then he got booked at the jail for assault and battery, larceny and destruction of property. How is this going to help anybody?
Nah,
how is
not.
This a form of restore of justice that helps Arby's? It doesn't. They're the victim in this scenario, so I'm saying them for that reason.
Sure, sure, sure.
It doesn't
restorative
help them
justice.
At all.
No,
it doesn't do anything for them.
Doesn't
so
do
it's
anything
so
for them.
Stupid.
It's dumb. Yeah. It doesn't prevent this. It doesn't do anything
doesn't
at all.
Doesn't do anything. Yeah. And it's so horrible.
And I'm not trying to make light of Dante's incident, but I kind of feel like that's how I would lose touch with my reality.
Stealing chicken and bacon?
Just fucking handful of chicken and bacon. Like, okay,
so
kicking
starving.
Cars and shit.
It's terrible. So a little bit slightly lighter news. At the Bronx Zoo now, you can name a cockroach after your ex for just $10.
Wait a minute. The Bronx Zoo's got cockroaches, first of all, like it's a display?
Yeah, well, they have cockroaches. It's like, you know, they have like an
okay.
insect exhibit.
And you can
I'm
name
sure.
one? Mm-hmm. And how? And what does that mean, name a cockroach?
Well,
it's
a Madagascar hissing cockroach. Okay.
Those are the big ones.
And you basically sign up. And it says, elusive, resilient, and sometimes scary. Love is like a roach. Name a roach. We'll be back in time for Valentine's Day 2017. So you basically sign up to stay in the loop, but they let you do this for Valentine's Day. You can name a Madagascar hissing cockroach after, you know, whoever you want, basically. And then publicize it as such.
That's called Bronx style. Happy fucking Valentine's, bitch. Fucking cockroach.
Cockroach. The cockroach.
I got the dead flowers coming next week.
Hilarious.
That's so trolling. Why always the I don't want to say the Bronx, but like that just seems Bronx.
The
like
Bronx
that,
is awesome.
It's a little bit gritty. Yeah. I don't know if they would do that in like the Brooklyn Zoo.
Well, not anymore, anyways.
Cockroaches.
There's no zoo in Brooklyn, but whatever. Actually, there's Prospect Park Zoo, but it's not called the Brooklyn Zoo. Anyways, I digress. Other thing I wanted to talk about was, and this is I saw this story come through and I thought it was interesting. It's actually on NPR and it's talking about the 1866 Memphis Massacre. I'm gonna play some audio.
Grim chapter in its history, a 150-year-old atrocity that shocked the nation at the time. It was nearly forgotten, in part, because of the language used to describe it. Christopher Blank of member station WKNO reports.
A somber procession began yesterday in the courtyard of the former Lorraine Motel. This is where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was killed in 1968. Everyone here knows about that piece of history, but until recently, this part of town was virtually silent on what happened in 1866.
This year, we have called their names, we have heard their plight, we've listened to the stories, and we have righted this wrong.
For Keith Norman, president of the Memphis NAACP, that wrong of history went deeper than not knowing about it. It was also about how it would finally be remembered. Historian Stephen V. Ash says newspapers of the era labeled what happened here a race riot, mostly on the basis that it began as a fight between black Union soldiers and some Irish police officers.
The rumor among the whites was that this was a full-scale black uprising in South Memphis.
The police called for reinforcements.
And so white mobs began forming, marched into South Memphis, and began indiscriminately shooting down black men, women, and children.
This went on for 36 hours.
The toll was approximately 46 black people dead, many others savagely beaten. Several women raped, all the black schools and churches in the city, all of them burned to the ground, along with almost 100 black homes. Yeah, it was a scene of devastation in South Memphis.
This mob attack would shape the course of Reconstruction-era politics and help speed the passage of the Constitution's 14th Amendment, guaranteeing citizenship to recently freed slaves.
So I just wanted to give some background on kind of what the story is about. So that gives everybody an idea about what the Memphis Massacre was. An individual decided they wanted to kind of do a commemoration. She petitioned to the NAACP, the local NAACP chapter, and got funding to sponsor and pay for a marker that would be put in the town to signify and talk about this 36 hours of terrorism. and submitted an application to the Tennessee Historical Commission, and they're the ones that kind of market all of these things that happen in Tennessee. And what came next was a month-long debate over what to name the violence. The commission wanted the words race riot at the top of the sign, but the phrase has troubling connotations for Beverly Bond, a historian at University of Memphis, who says naming is very important. If your name is John and I insist on calling you Johnny, it's really a power relationship. Most people tend to think in a 20th century frame of reference that race riot must be African Americans who are rioting and destroying their community, end quote. And lots of other people also did not want the word race riot to put in. In the end, they ended up putting up a private marker that summarized what happened and calling it a massacre versus having the words race riot.
And I just want to be clear that the institution insisting on the phrase race riot was the Tennessee Historical Society.
Correct.
Fucking A, man. This is how whitewashing happens. And good on them for doing it privately and using the word massacre. And I think that there's a couple different, like when I saw this and we're talking about it, I was listening to it, to the report. In my mind, I'm thinking like, you know, nothing they've described is anywhere close to a race riot. So like there's...
Well, actually, in truth, it was a race riot. Okay. But unfortunately, as they mentioned here in this 20th century context, you know, when you look up race riot, it's always historically going to be white people attacking black people. Black people don't race riot and hurt white people. It's just not what happens. It's never happened.
Agreed.
Ever in the history of this country.
I still think even in that, again, I think even that phrasing, the word riot is not nearly as grievous as massacre, as burning 100 homes and churches and fucking killing and raping. That's not, I mean, I guess that's a riot, but in my mind, that's a lot fucking worse than a riot, you know? But I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and I, we have a personal history with the word race riot being, inappropriately used. Mm-hmm. You know, it strikes a chord for me personally, just because of some issues we've had with that phrase.
That phrase, of course. Yeah, that's why it stuck out to me. I was like, ugh, it's so like uncomfortable for me. And like, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm really happy that these things are getting spoken about, because I feel like so much of our history like is obscured because of anti-blackness and not wanting to be truthful about, you know, the racist context of black life in America. And because this is just something I know, especially in a place like Tennessee and in Memphis, it's a lot of generations that live in the same town, in the same area, in the same counties. And so this may sound like it's a long time ago, but in terms of, you know, your familial links and your the context of your community, it's not that long at all. And
one of these fuckers on this fucking society fucking has a great grandpa that was fucking part of that fucking group. Guaranteed. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, oh, we can't let Grandpa Fred be a fucking massacre. It's a race riot.
Yeah. So anyways, I just, I was just wanting to bring that in, and we'll have the link to the thing and everything.
But again, that's just like I think there's another article we're going to look at later in the show about like this wasn't accidental kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
And it's sometimes hard for people to understand the like difference between planned. Like when we think of planned, we think of like meticulous and really well thought out, but there's planned. And then there's like, not avoided. You know what I'm saying? Like if an inevitable consequence of gravity is that this thing's going to fall and break, doesn't necessarily mean that like it planned to break, but like, you know, that's an inevitable consequence. And I think when it comes to whitewashing and some of the shit that we do, it's like this, you know, death from a billion paper cuts. Like you can't see like this one plaque on one fucking building in one town that we wouldn't even know about if the one person hadn't been a little bit like adamant about the language. And it got, you know, on NPR or whatever.
Yeah.
How many of these things, A, don't make it into the news, and B, the person's like, okay, put race riot on there, I guess. All right, whatever. It's all we can do.
Mm.
We want a plaque, I guess. Okay. That's what, they're the society.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, I guess. Anyways, I thought that was interesting. Just that phrasing and how important words are, and also putting them in the historical context of them, meaning a modern day approach to using a word, even if it's a correct terminology, you know, you have to acknowledge what people are going to think about it in the current context of
things. Yeah, what's the denotation and the connotation might have changed over time.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think that, you know, that's a very white thing to do, is to have these philosophical conversations that never take into account the reality of what people are going to be taking away from use of language. It's just like the whole abolition thing at the General Assembly last year, you know, where it's like, okay, I get that the phrasing, that term means something different than the way you're trying to make it sound. And you not acknowledging that is a problem. Like,
yeah. And that's a hallmark of like white derailment, like like liberal derailment is to focus on one fucking word. Right. Like there's that thing you're talking about, it was like a long statement, it was a bunch of things. And they spent an hour and a half nitpicking one fucking word in the thing and basically making the people that wrote it feel like they were stupid for using that word. Right.
Yeah.
And it was total bullshit. And in the same sense, you know, I don't know. I'll let it go on. But language matters, and don't be fucking the guy or the person that, as a white person, that focuses on one goddamn fucking word and nitpicks the entire, you know, like we do that in a learning experience when it comes to race. Like you get all fragile because you said racist. Like the word racist is just that one word. Like what were they really saying? Like break it down. You know, it doesn't mean you're horrible off a person, but let's go.
Or it does. Whatever. great news from Netflix.
Depends on whether Leslie or Drew said it.
Sure does. Sure does depend. Dear White People is coming to television. Netflix has ordered 10 episode order to a half-hour comedy series based on Justin Simien's acclaimed debut indie feature. Simien is writing the series adaptation, and he'll also direct the first episode. It's going to begin filming this year for a 2017 debut and will be produced by Lionsgate, whose sister company Roadside Attractions released the original film, which we loved, in 2014.
Yeah. Is it starring Tyler?
They haven't announced anybody who's attached to it. I doubt it. Those people are kind of old to be playing college students at this point, and also Tessa Thompson is going to be the Thor's love interest in the next Thor movie.
She's going to want to be
in a 10 episode Netflix show, but who knows? But anyways, it's really exciting. Such great news for Justin. I mean, literally this entire project started. He used his tax refund to make the concept trailer for this that went viral via YouTube. And then he got $50,000 in donations from people all over the world and crowdfunded it. And it went on to win the special grand jury prize for Breakthrough Talent at Sundance and an Independent Spirit Award for Best First Screenplay. And now to see it coming to TV, it's so gratifying to see someone's hard work and creativity, especially using their skill sets to address racial issues in such an entertaining and useful way. I just think it's awesome. I'm super excited. Netflix doesn't fuck around.
Super chill. And on a like sort of somewhat side related tangentially, I don't know how Justin did it, but that's a very low budget for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's now the company makes an anamorphic lens for the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand photography well enough to really tell you what anamorphic is, but it makes your iPhone into true 16:9 stunning HD. It doubles the pixels by making an image on the disc that you can't really read. You have to deinterlace it. You have to like take it to another program and then like stitch it back together. But so people are making films with these anamorphic lenses. They're like a $175 lens you clip onto your iPhone now makes fucking just like unbelievable, like really high quality fucking film.
Yeah, so Matthew Cherry, who's a director, he is an innovator of this, using this anamorphic lens with his iPhone to film full movies, which is really exciting.
Wait, the guy that made Dear White People? No.
No, that's a different name. Yeah. Justin Simien, I said that before. You're talking about the anamorphic lens. I'm just talking about that. Is that Matthew Cherry, he's doing a new film called Nine Rides, which is going to star, I think, Nicole Beharie and Lance Gross. Anyways, I follow him on Twitter. He's really cool and super smart, but he's using this technology. And the movie Tangerine, which came out, I think, either a year or two ago, about two trans women, was filmed entirely also on...
I think what we haven't seen with that technology yet, but will, is the lowering of the barrier to entry for filmmakers. That people will now be able to make films that maybe couldn't or wouldn't have, and it's gonna you're gonna see different
products.
Oh, and
I think Tangerine is exactly that. It's a movie that would never have been made with the need of a studio, like never, ever, ever.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's great to see. I think it's wonderful for creative people. I think it's wonderful for as an audience member. I think it's great to see, you know, so many much more varied voices be able to have high quality representation of their art, because I think that's the real. The thing that I think is really great about these technological advances is that it allows someone to really see out their vision without needing huge backing. And
oh, yeah,
that changes the landscape of what people see and how it's received
absolutely.
And all of those things.
It disintermediates by getting rid of the studio, right? And you think of like we talked about on the podcast, those Lucy cards. And I don't know why I always think of that as the just the quintessential centering on whiteness. If you don't know what it is, look it up. It's a Kodak Kodachrome image that they would give to the operators to focus their color optimization on a daily basis. Every single day before printing film and making images, they would focus on a white woman. So like forever and ever and ever, like white people came out nice in contrast, but black people had to have like, you know, 1200 fucking watt lights. Like you look at like Mr. Tibbs, he's sweating like a motherfucker because he's under fucking like ridiculous lighting because he'd be washed out otherwise. But anyway, the Lucy card, this is the equivalent of that. You know, it's basically like centering entirely on whiteness, you know, the studio, right? Because it's a white studio with white people and white money and white directors and white, you know, everything that gets greenlit, everything that gets red, the entire process is rife with white gaze. And giving a individual a tool to make their own movie, wow, that's amazing. It's gonna allow stories that, like you said, no way it would be anywhere near a studio. No. Or if a studio did, it would fucking ruin it.
Of course.
It would corrupt it.
Yeah. The control is there. I love it. It's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I saw this article and I think it's amazing. And I don't know all the information about what and why it's been banned, but female genital mutilation has been banned in Nigeria. So I guess that's history making. And is it the first of the nations to ban it? No. Let's see here. Nigeria made history by outlawing female genital mutilation. The ban falls under the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act that passed in the Senate on May 5th, recently enacted into law. One of the last acts of the outgoing president, Goodluck Jonathan, his successor, Muhammadu Buhari, was sworn into office May 29th. Let's see here. Female genital mutilation or cutting is the act of either partially or totally removing the external female genitalia or causing injury to the female genital organs for non-medical purposes. Mm-hmm. More than 130 million girls and women have experienced this in 29 countries in Africa and the Middle East where the practice is most common. So community activism campaigns and a number of organizations got together to help end the practice. Reported that teenage girls were now one-third less likely to undergo female genital mutilation than 30 years ago. And the new law criminalizes the procedure as hope that the ban will fully eliminate the practice and be strongly enforced to combat existing societal pressures.
Mm. It's good news.
It's fantastic news.
Yeah, it's great to
see. And I think there's, I don't say like, I hope there's not a misunderstanding, but like, you know, genital mutilation, like that's where the language is right. It's mutilation. That's not circumcision.
No.
It's not, there's no improvement. There's no, you know, in fact, many of these women have horrible complications from it.
Yeah. Fistulas and all sorts of things.
Oh my God.
It's terrible.
Awful. But,
it's so rooted in, you know, sexism, patriarchy, all of those things. So it's, you know, just needs
control,
to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's it for news, but we have some This Week in Hashtags.
Banana, banana. it's been too long, so I'm not going to pull up the actual ones, but Birdman Ultimatums was fucking hilarious.
Birdman Ultimatums.
Black Twitter fucking just like, every once in a while I was like, thank you, Black Twitter. That was good. Are we done? Are you over?
Are you done? Anyways, that was funny. I had a couple. Lemonade Syllabus, hashtag Lemonade Syllabus, which has been amazing. Candace Benbow asked Black women to share their suggested companion reading to go with Beyonce's opus, Lemonade. And I think almost 200 of us responded to her, and she created these really great little images with everybody, with our pictures and our title and stuff, and then the things that we suggested that are read. I'll give you mine, and they'll be, she's actually putting them all together in one place, and a designer's working on it now, so it'll be released, and people will be able to interact with all the content. But my five were Kindred by Octavia Butler, Orleans by Sherry L. Smith, The Hills of Hebron by Sylvia Winter, who is a Jamaican author, The Other Side of Paradise, Stacey Ann Chin's autobiography, and Tell My Horse by Zora Neale Hurston.
I'm just going to really just give like a emphatic support for Kindred. Octavia Butler in general. I can't say enough about
it's
Octavia.
Ridiculous.
And just that it's so still like I didn't discover her until wherever how long because of Supremacy. But oh, she's amazing as a sci-fi writer. Love it. And Kindred's fantastic.
Yeah, Kindred is great.
Is that part? That's part of the Patternist, no?
No, it's a standalone. It's actually was her last novel.
Her last novel, yeah. Okay.
And then the last one I want... Oh, two more. One is the, Frisco Five, who are five hunger strikers in San Francisco that are demanding the firing of the San Francisco's police chief, and they are confronting the mayor of San Francisco, Ed Lee, who has been literally just hiding from protesters and activists there. It's pretty gross. Anyways, they've been camped out in front of the Mission Police Station since last month and vowed not to eat until the police chief steps down or is fired, and they intend to march to City Hall on Tuesday. This was this past week, and they had a lot of support to further their message. Known as the Frisco Five, the activists will demand the removal of that the mayor remove Chief Greg Scherr from his role in the San Francisco Police Department. Excuse me. And following the recent controversial police killings of Mario Woods, Alex Nieto, Amilcar Lopez, and most recently a homeless man named Luis Gongorga, Maria Gutierrez, 66, is one of the strikers. Edwin Lindo, 29. Edwin himself, he's lost 20 pounds in 13 days.
Oh,
they are really wasting away. Two rappers, Selassie Blackwell, 39, and Illich Sato, 42. I mentioned Edwin, then two educators, Ike Pinkston, and then Gutierrez, who's also... an educator as well. So I just want to, you know, you can look at the hashtag and see lots of photos and people that were supporting them. They had a big rally there on Tuesday supporting them. And I just, you know, to me, it's so sad that this is the lengths that people have to go to draw attention to something that should be so obvious. And so, you know, we talk about who is accountable to whom. And this is a perfect example of citizens who are demanding an audience, who are demanding that their elected officials listen to them, speak with them, and carry out the things that are right for this community. And it's clear, you know, you don't do a hunger strike the first time you go to talk about things, right? You know, they have exhausted every avenue possible to be heard, and that this is where we find them. You know, I think they're 14 or 15 days into the strike now, and you know, just to think about not eating, like honestly, if I go a day without eating, I'm probably, you don't want to be anywhere near me. And so to think of them making this huge commitment and this willingness to harm themselves physically for what they believe in, it's incredibly inspiring, and I just send a lot of solidarity out to them.
Yeah.
and support them, of course. So I
it's a, like you said, like a almost last resort. I mean, really, it's been how many days?
14 days, I think.
And he's just ghost. Patrick Swayze, no one around. Mayor's gone.
He's just kind of like deciding not to like meet with them at
how
all.
At some point, how can that not reflect unbelievably poorly on Lee? Like, how can that not, like, how's the, as the press, I'm not in San Francisco, I don't know, but are the press at least like, I don't know.
The press? Come on.
I mean, it's in front of the examiner's office and shit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it doesn't mean very much. Mm. And then the last one, is actually combined with our dope black girl. So let me just... So in Chicago this past weekend, NFL Draft Town, the draft actually went through and was held in Chicago. When we were there a couple weeks ago, we saw him. We were like, what the fuck is this?
And not just like dead ass fucking center, Michigan fucking Avenue, like taking up like huge blocks of like wicked real estate for fucking a draft. Ugh.
Yeah. So the amazing black women activists in Chicago carried out a formation-inspired protest blocking streets in Chicago on Lakeshore Drive and Jackson Boulevard to protest a police officer who is still employed, Dante Servin, after killing Rekia Boyd, and the layoffs at CSU. Local university and police say about 50 women participated, but it was coordinated by Asada's Daughters, Black Lives Matter Chicago, and FLY. And amazing. They were dressed in formation gears. They had black from head to toe. They had chain, the chain that Beyonce had across their chest, and they were wearing raspberry berets in honor of Prince as well. And it was just so beautiful to see them. And shout out to my friend Ashley, who was one of the protesters. 17 of them were arrested. They've all since been released, but they were under the hashtag Remembering Rakia. And here's their explanation for their actions. Decision makers at the local and state levels have made it clear where their financial priorities lie. We continue to receive cuts to the institutions that keep Black women safe, institutions that continue to be replaced by terrorist cops who brutalize and murder Black women without penalty. Dante Servin murdered Rakia Boyd because he felt he could. Lawmakers refuse to give CSU the funding it needs because they feel there will be no repercussions. Our continued resistance serves as a penalty for destroying Black lives. There will be no uninterrupted NFL draft town when Black women die without justice. There will be no silence when Mayor Emanuel and the city council are cutting a $302,000 deal for an event worth $3.2 million at the same time that we cannot afford to fund Black education. We choose to hashtag remember Rakia by demanding that Dante Servin is fired without a pension and instead that decision makers commit full permanent funding to Chicago State University. Hashtag don't pay Dante. Hashtag save CSU.
And, you know, the they said they're spending all this money. The city of Chicago is basically gifting, you know, like free this, that, and the other thing, tax, whatever.
Yeah.
The NFL just maybe last year stopped becoming a nonprofit because they decided that the negative press around them being listed as a nonprofit, and they didn't want to have to disclose Goodell's salary.
Yeah.
Literally. Like, oh, we're a nonprofit. Wait a minute. We're paying Roger like $30
million.
Make it a business. Mm-hmm. We had $2 in loss. No taxes.
Ridiculous.
Assholes, dude.
Ridiculous. All right, moving on.
Oh, wait a second. I got this new setup and it's making all this noise. Oh, I unplugged it and see what had happened. Is I got a check in and a savings. Wait a minute with this commercial.
So POTUS gave his final White House Correspondents' Dinner speech, nerd prom, if you will, which was black as fuck, both with the president being his funny black self and Larry Whitmore giving the blackest keynote address of the White House Correspondents' Dinner ever.
That was the blackest anything in the White House ever.
Literally just talking to Black Twitter.
Oh, no, and Obama. I felt like it was. He wrote that, like, in my opinion, Larry and his staff were like, this is for the president. We're doing this for the president. And I guarantee he fucking loved the shit out of it. Because they, after fucking 8 years of all the fucking, like, stuffy fucking state fucking horse shit he's had to do and all the fucking flack he gets, have Larry up there giving a fucking, like, dude, it was like the equivalent of like the most fucking dappinest love ever, dude.
It was great. It was so funny and all of that stuff. And I'm not even gonna get into Larry's speech because it was great and he had all these wonderful funny just super black points. But obviously the president had some zingers as well. He's pretty good at his
I've got him queued
timing
up
the... and everything. It's like 30 minutes. You're gonna play the whole thing? I don't think so.
Do you know any time spots? No.
No.
Okay.
I will just make the link available, but I read a few. He says, I was a little late tonight. I was running on CP time. Which stands for jokes that white people should not make. That's a little dig there. I like that one. Someone jumped the White House fence last week, but I give it to the Secret Service credit. They found Michelle and brought her back home. Just 7 more months, baby. Settle down. Hilarious. What were the other ones that I really
I wish there had been a like C-SPAN 4 with like the white like a white people cam, like tight shots of fucking like all the fucking like old ass fucking white people like I feel uncomfortable, Bernice.
Oh, so funny. It was really funny.
Reaction cam.
Yeah.
I would have definitely signed up for C-SPAN.
And he literally dropped the mic. He said Obama out and then had a prop up there. My favorite thing about that is that somebody had to have the prop mic there because it wasn't one he was actually using. So that the fact that a conversation had to be had is like, oh, no, I'm going to drop the mic, so I need another mic up here. But you have a mic. No, I'm not going to use that mic. I'm just using it for effect.
Yeah, so you want to damage a good, you know. Sure,
I loved it. He really lit into the press, which he should, room, which was great.
Definitely.
Like blaming them for basically Donald Trump, pretty much, which was really good.
And that's not a stretch. That's a pretty like clear connected the dots. Like someone did the media report of how much airtime all the networks gave President Obama during his fucking reelection versus how much airtime they've given Donald Trump during his fucking campaign. It's outrageous. It's like 4-1. Literally.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Like, you like his fucking, you know, bombast, fucking weird, fucking crazy, fucking racist, fucking rantings. It's good ratings. Great. Thank you for that.
So that was really good. That's it for that.
I thought it was fucking awesome. And I think it's the epitome. Like that is like we have the category lame duck blackness, and like I'm not saying like he knew it and heard it, but like that, like what is lame duck blackness? That. The White House Correspondents' Dinner, right. 2016, right there.
So you mentioned that at the end of Larry Whitmore's keynote, he said, "You did it, my nigga," to Barack.
Oh, and white President people Obama.
White people got in your feelings. Piers Morgan, because he's so obsessed with black people.
He's obsessed with the N-word.
He's as a shit with black people all the time. He just did it with Beyonce. He does it all the time.
This is the second think piece he's written about black people who shouldn't use the N-word.
He writes about that's all he writes about is what black people should and shouldn't be doing.
Why is Piers Morgan fucking any fucking authority on any fucking thing, much less what black people should and shouldn't do vis-a-vis the N-word? Get the fuck out of here, Piers Morgan. Anyways. I hate you. Where's that petition to send him home?
What's funny to me is like he's like, oh, you know, said it was Wilmore's stunt was demeaning and backed the president into a corner of excruciating discomfort. Of course, the White House said that the President Obama appreciated the spirit of Mr. Wilmore's expression on Saturday night, black as fuck. But on his show Monday, Larry had some a quick response to fucking ads
fragile white people
to Piers and all these other white people that have been all up in their feelings about him using my nigga to talk to Barack. And again, I thought it was really funny because he lost the room like immediately. Like the first joke he had, they were like, nah, we're not here for this.
That's why I said it was written for president.
Like, oh, this is going a whole different way. And it's so great. It's like the last one that Barack has to do. And I just thought it was great.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the nightly show. So kind. I am Larry Wilmore. So how was your weekend? Mine was pretty good. I hosted a little dinner party. You know, with a few friends. Me, Don Lemon, the president, you know.
Don Lemon.
My boys, right? And, you know, I'm wrapping up my little speech and giving the president some props. Tell him how much I appreciated him being the first black president and what that meant to me, right? And then I buttoned it with a little, colloquialism. So, Mr. President, if I'm going to keep it 100, yo, Barry, you did it, my nigga. Did it. Thank you very much. Good night.
And then POTUS dapped him, by the way.
What colloquialism? Keep it 100?
There was a lot of reaction online. Many people were upset about it.
Yeah, man,
and many people
it
supported it.
Unbelievable.
And like the president himself, the reaction was mixed. Oh, shoot, I did it again. God, I did it. Don't make those jokes, Larry. Don't. Now, look, seriously, though, I completely understand why people would be upset about that. It's a very charged word. I get it. But there was one particular critique from across the pond that brings up a very important distinction. Piers Morgan, star of Stage and Screen.
Is that the right word?
Yes, professional Beyonce disliker. He quoted me as saying, yo, Barry, you did it, my N*ER. Now, hold on. Are you saying I called the president a nigger? Okay, that's horrible. I would never do that. I believe I said, yo, Barry, you did it, my nigga. There's a difference. Piers, you did not properly conjugate that slur. Okay? Very important. Very important. Nigger is what white people use to denigrate, demean, and dehumanize black people. And nigga is a term of endearment some black people use between each other to take back that power. Now, you also said in your article, Larry, you're not a N star 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 ER, and nor is Barack Obama. I know, stop calling us that. Stop it. Stop it. Conjugate the slur. And then also, don't use it. Don't do it.
Anyways, that was Larry's response to Piers's bullshit.
Yeah, you know, Piers, I feel like every, like, what is it like? There's like a clock, like every like 6 weeks, he's all like,
notice me, senpai, notice me.
He's got to come out. Like, oh my God, I need to come out. To come out. No one's talking about me.
So we have some white people to talk about.
Of course, because we always know.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
White people.
You know, and, we skipped over the GOP clown card. It's kind of over. There's no
it
more
is,
GOP
clown. So there's no clown card.
It's
just
Trump.
Why I said skip it.
It's just
Trump.
The racist fucking
racist.
Winnebago.
Yeah. That's it. There's no clown card.
With fucking.
Or it's a clown card with one fucking clown. So, yeah, it's, a,
yeah,
it's over.
Yeah, it's done.
I mean, I know Kasich hasn't thrown in the towel, but I don't know why. So, anyways, I guess he just likes wasting people's money.
Yeah.
So, the explanation I can come up with.
I like how Ted did it. Name a VP and then resign.
name a VP and drop out. That's not how it's supposed to go? That's not. Oh, my bad.
I did that in the wrong order? Shoot. Sorry, Carly.
Yeah. One more thing Carly's thrown into the ground. Anyways. Yes,
so, that was like a delay, like a hand grenade bomb. Like, she bankrupted that too.
That too. It's her specialty. Come on. Saw this op-ed through the Washington Post come through under Acts of Faith Opinion by one Aaron Halbert. The title of it is, My Wife and I Are White Evangelicals. Here's Why We Chose to Give Birth to Black Triplets. Now,
give birth?
Yes. So apparently there is a Christian embryo service, the National Embryo Donation Center, a Christian embryo bank that you can get embryos, you can adopt embryos, other people's embryos from.
I'm still not understanding, like, why?
Well, because they believe that. I'm going to try and, like, not be disrespectful, okay? Life begins at conception to these evangelicals. And so these are all babies.
Got it.
Right?
And,
babies.
But, and help me understand, these are fertile. So there's a sperm and an egg, and as soon as the two get together, it's a zygote, and then they freeze it at that exact moment, like, shortly thereafter,
correct,
right? Like, it's literally, like, a two-celled, like, zygote.
Yes.
And when
and
I say they,
there.
The purpose was for a woman that was wanting, had infertility treatments, right?
Correct.
They're doing IVF, so they make multiple embryos because not everyone works. They try like six.
Right.
That's why people have triplets, because they put like six embryos in, right?
Correct.
So what we're talking about are, like, I don't want to say like leftover, that's just right. Like, these are like embryos that didn't get implanted, didn't get used.
Correct.
And they're just in storage, like, just in case? Like, maybe they
right.
want IVF treatments again or something?
Well, I mean, I'd have to do a little bit more research, but the way I think it works is let's say you were doing in vitro, you had, you know, fertilized eggs, you got pregnant, and now you're done with the in vitro portion or needing those, but you have multiple other embryos that are still there, not implanted, and I'm sure you're given an option to destroy them, to donate them, to do whatever. And one of the things you can do is donate to the National Embryo Donation Center, a Christian embryo bank where I guess evangelicals go to save, quote unquote, these children in their mind. Yes.
Wow, that's really like that's going really far. Like,
oh,
if you're on the, like, I'm a you know, pro-life individual, I suppose that's better than, like, killing doctors that perform abortions. Like, if you're going to be really, like, I don't want to call that fanatical, but that's pretty, that's kind of fanatical. Like, that's like extreme behavior in regards to your beliefs in terms of pro-life.
Mm-hmm. Now, they have two adopted children, normal adoption, of a black boy and a biracial girl. So they have a daughter and a son who are already not white. And so when they went to do this saving of these embryos, they requested to have an African-American embryo used.
So that they could have a biological child that would look like their adopted children.
Yeah, so that the child, because they didn't know how many it was going to be, and ended up being triplets, but that it would look like the rest of their family. Now,
And when it's an embryo, it's going to be, so that so genetically, DNA-wise, this child is going to have none of the mother that's giving birth and none of the father that are raising this child's DNA.
Yeah, just like the other two children.
Just like the other two. Have. So really, I guess I can understand if a woman wanted to undergo the experience of having
which
a birth.
They mentioned they thought it was an interest because they thought about having another child, adopting another child.
That makes more sense than the pro-life. And it seems awful, I don't call it savior-y, but
it's so super savior-y and it's so weird to me. And because he wrote this himself, I just wanted to read a few of the things
this is a humble brag article or kind of?
It's an opinion piece that he wrote about why they did this.
Yeah, no, see,
and so there's a lot of it that's really uncomfortable.
He could have just done it and not wrote it. It's what's the Sandra Tui? She did that thing and she took the picture of the kids and she posted it on social media. You fucking give him a ride. You don't fucking tweet about it. Look at me, give him a ride.
So there's a few things he has in here. I'll read a few of them that he says. He says, there's something beautiful and enriching being the only white face sitting and chatting with some of my African-American friends as my son gets his hair cut on a Saturday morning. There's also something wonderful in the relationship that is built as my wife asks a black friend on Facebook how to care for our little biracial daughter's hair. The beauty of a multi-ethnic family is found there in the fact that the differences are the very thing that make ours richer and fuller.
And I'm not, so I've had, we've talked a lot on this podcast about our relationship just being we met a person and we fell in love and that person happened to be a different race. That wasn't we didn't set out oh, I want to have a relationship with a black woman. That wasn't my objective or goal. Where there are people that do that, comes off kind of a little bit fetishizing.
Yeah.
And a lot, everything he's saying isn't fetishizing, but there's this dynamic of and I've heard this before, the younger generations, they do all these interracial stuff and they're going to have mixed babies and we're all going to be brown. And it's going to just solve everything, as if an eon of heterosexual relationships has ended patriarchy in some way. Interracial relationships is going to somehow end racism.
Yeah, I know that adopting of non-white children is super popular with white evangelicals. They see it as some sort of this is the good Christian thing to do or whatever. But it's so steeped in anti-blackness because they feel a need to lift black children out of whatever. And it's just weird to me, the whole thing.
It's always this poor black child. I want to save the poor black
Let me read a few more excerpts from this and we can move on pretty quickly. But I just was so the thing about him talking about it is weird. And then just so many of these things give me a clear indication that he shouldn't be raising any black children, because these black children, I don't even know what to say about how their social development as black people is going to actually work. And that's not to say that white parents can't do that or can't facilitate that. This particular white father can't. When he says things however, there was also the young black girl who wept when we told her this little boy with her skin color was our son, and the older white doctor who lovingly prayed over him and held him so tenderly. He's not a fucking pet.
Yeah, and then even the sentence about the barbershop was like a racial tourist. I got to hang out in the black barbershop. It was beautiful and enriching.
It's a way for him to say he has a stake and entry into a culture that he has no right to. And that's really what, I mean.
And then the desire for that was so deep that they had babies.
Yeah.
That they gave birth to triplets.
Yeah.
And the way to get that, they, you know, and maybe they believe, you know, as evangelicals.
And even
you know?
He says, I'm honestly, so many of these things just like make me cringe. I felt sheer delight during this pregnancy watching my son and daughter with his dark brown skin and her with the ringlet hair and slightly tan skin kiss my white wife's growing belly. It's creepy.
Yeah.
Like all of that is creepy.
It's a, you know, and there's a, definitely, it's a lifetime of we white people not thinking about our race in any sort of significant way so that we don't know when we're thinking and using race in really like inappropriate ways in like in this regard. Like he's thinking like, oh, this is good. It's going to bridge the, it's going to make a difference in the world. And it's like, oh, it's going to give your kids maybe some fucked up shit. I don't know what it's going to do. It doesn't matter, but it's not my family. But the fact that he wrote it,
they
said,
he goes, knowing that it's often more challenging to find adoptive homes in the United States for non-Caucasian children, we informed the agency that we were willing to accept any child except a fully Caucasian child.
Except a fully.
Except.
That's their only option. And you know what? The fuck, I swear to God, this should be like the white genocide people's like fucking like.
Literally, like go after these fucking people.
Yeah, go talk to these people.
Go talk to them. Talk to them. Get the fuck out of my mentions and go talk to these fuckheads. How about that?
If you really want to, if you think there's a white genocide, talk to the evangelicals.
Talk to these dudes. Por favor.
Yeah, that's, again, there's a lot that's just really kind of like, doesn't sit well with me, but the fact that he really wrote it, like, and was like, I'm gonna, you know, show the world, and I'm gonna sell this, not sell it, but I'm gonna tell my story because it's beautiful.
Oh,
and
trust me when
and,
I tell you, they'll probably either have a book deal or a reality show before the end of the
I
year.
I said sell my story because so, that was my first thought, and
just
I didn't want to be fucking,
aware.
I didn't want to be all
be
fucking
ready
like
for it.
Crass and fucking pessimistic, but yeah, the fucking black triplet story is coming to fucking ABC Family soon.
It's inevitable.
I'm sorry, so sorry, so sorry that I was such a fool.
Actually, at first here on the John, I gotta apologize.
Oh,
very white guy. I apologize to Femesque.
Do I get to rate your apology, or how's that work?
I guess you could, but I, this is like a, and this is beyond. I've already done the apology on Twitter, but I apologize, Brianna. I'm very, very sorry. I made a mistake. I did not take your handle out of a series of tweets. It was totally my fault, and I feel terrible. And I would do anything you need or want in terms of restitution. I believe I already tweeted letting you, folks know that it was my mistake, and I apologize. But again, my mistake. Sorry.
Okay. Did you do the 6 to 7 steps?
I don't think I requested forgiveness because it's just Twitter. Like, I don't think I need like forgiveness for like being a fucking idiot, like a noob on Twitter.
Right.
And she had, and she was really polite about it. She's like, you know, like, oh, I chalk it up to excitement over Lemonade and Beyonce and shit. Because some people were doing this whole bullshit like Beyonce doesn't have a college degree, but like she fucking changed the game. Like marketing wise, she blew the game up. She wrote the book, right? And Femesque, Brianna Smarth, had quite a bit of information and statements and opinions. She's on record about that and even storified it. And I was attempting to vociferously agree with her, just like, oh my God, blah, blah, blah. And I kept her handle in because I was on my phone and I was being an idiot and I wasn't paying attention. And it looked like I was like telling her, like, oh, you. But, and that's obviously how it came off, but my fuck up. I hadn't, it was Mercury's in retrograde as the start of it. I haven't had a foot and mouth moment on Twitter in a while. I even tweeted, I said, oh fuck, I'm an idiot. I haven't made a mistake like that in a while. I guess I was due. And I spelled it D-O. I was like, oh fuck, I'm logging off. I'm out.
Mercury's in retrograde.
Retrograde. Typo on a fucking apology. I'm out.
Well, we do have some other.
You
want to
give me a grade? You can give me a grade.
I'll give you a 7.
All right,
I'll give you a 7. So I don't know if we talked about this on the show or not, but 10 elementary school students were arrested. I did say that correctly. 10 elementary school students were arrested in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Boy, Tennessee is not having a good show with us today. Because they were, I don't even know what to even say about it. The whole thing is ridiculous. There was a fight that happened and they arrested 10 students because they didn't break up the fight.
What? For watching the fight?
Uh-huh.
Like standing around in a circle going, fight, fight, fight. You got arrested for that?
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that every kid's done on every schoolyard forever for the last billion years?
Yeah.
They arrested 10 kids for that?
Mm-hmm. They waited 2 weeks to why. The police had to pull a handful of children from their classroom, led some out in handcuffs, and take them away in squad cars.
Let me guess, apparent charge,
not, of course, not intervening in a neighborhood fight.
But that's not even a charge. Mm-hmm. There's no law that says you have to, like, good Samaritan jump in the middle of a fucking fray. There's good Samaritan laws. Like, if someone's injured, like, that's a law. There's things that, like, not every state has them, but some states, like, if there's someone who's in need and you don't offer them support, like, you could be like, you know, it's like a misdemeanor and shit, right? Like, not handcuffs, but stand around while somebody's in a fight.
It's crazy.
What are you supposed to do? Fucking get punched?
They ranged in age from 6 to 11.
They arrested a 6-year-old?
The video shows a 5 and a 6-year-old having a disagreement. And they said that the kids were charged with criminal responsibility for the conduct of another.
You know,
they were released from they were taken to a juvenile center. This is the prison to school pipeline.
This is exactly because
now all of these children have something in their record that says they have gone to a juvenile center.
They've got the experience.
They've been arrested.
They've got the experience. They literally at age fucking 6, one of these kids
issued arrest warrants.
Yeah, one of these kids knows I can just be standing around. And these people can come and take me and put handcuffs on me and put me in this facility and take me away. Literally.
Yeah. He says, this is his apology. I'm so saddened and I'm so sorry this incident happened because I truly think it could have been avoided. I want to believe what happened here was an anomaly because of the good work that I see. Errors were made and now we're going to correct them moving forward and fix them so they are not repeated. He says that at least one of the individuals involved in the bullying case is connected to a larger criminal case, which is weird. And then
why say that?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Which prompted a deeper look into the incident. Remember, there was a victim here, too. So if my officer didn't do their job that day and we ignored the victim, what would this conversation be today that we failed to do our job? We all learn from experiences. Most of us learn through failures. We've got to move forward as an agency and move forward with the community. That's his apology. So what do you get?
No, that's fucking awful, dude. That's
horrible.
That's like, he didn't apologize. Nope. He says he feels bad that this incident happened. That's not an apology.
Mm-hmm. He says, I'm so sorry this incident happened.
Yeah.
It's not an apology.
Yeah, I'm so sorry the Challenger space shuttle blew up, too. Mm-hmm. That's not an apology for it. He took no responsibility. He deflected and fucking parried and fucking alley-ooped and fucking, you know. No, that's a zero. I think this, again, deserves the Rod and Karen negative scale. That's terrible.
Yeah. And it's so ridiculous because he's talking about looking into the department's handcuffing policy, which currently only says that an officer should, quote, take into consideration whether to handcuff a child under 12. That's all they take into consideration.
But I just, and then like even the like the this, you know, like backpedaling defense, like, you know, what would you have said if the victim didn't get justice? Like,
you think handcuffing a 6-year-old is justice for anybody? Good luck with that.
I don't think it's in this report, but it was a disagreement between a 6-year-old
and a 5-year-old.
You know, I understand that there's a victim and on that like sort of restorative justice sort of kind of thinking. I'm pretty certain if either of those individuals were hospitalized because of this fight, if there was broken bones or blood or wounds of some sort, it would have been in the report. That guy would have said it. He would have said, this person had a broken blah, blah. What would have happened then? Because none of that got said, meaning none of that happened. It was a little, you know, schoolyard fight. What in the fucking benefit of anybody is arresting 10 people for that? What does that do anything? That's the dumbest thing ever.
It's terrible. It's really terrible.
Arresting people for not intervening in a fight? That's fucking horrible, dude. That's just the stupidest.
It's terrible. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. We have a tractor trailer, and actually, why don't we do that? We'll do that next week.
All right, because we did the tractor trailer for.
We didn't do the tractor trailer for Civil War. Although we are going to see that today. Woo,
oh my
can't
God.
Wait. But I did come across. We're going to do the next one. We do is Southside with You, which is the movie about Barack and Michelle Obama's first date. It's pretty exciting, and I'm excited to look at it, to listen to the trailer, hear what you think about it. But I came across this video on Facebook, and I just had to play it for people in case they haven't heard it yet, because I just literally almost shit myself. It's so funny.
Hey, Dooley.
What up, boss?
Alan couldn't make it today, so I need to go feed the lions.
Feed the lions? What lions?
The ones here.
At this zoo?
Yeah.
Where Al at?
He's sick. He should be in tomorrow.
Man, shit, them lions gonna eat tomorrow. I'm not feeding no lions.
What's your concern?
You want me to go there and feed some lions? I'm scared of pigeons.
They're harmless. They don't bite.
I know they don't bite. They kill.
It's part of your job.
No, it's not. When I fill out the job application, I say the garbage, man. I pick up the garbage in the zoo.
Why do you want to feed the lions?
Black people don't do that. You see black people on animal planet chasing lions? No. That's white people's shit. Y'all do that. You feed the lions.
That's white people shit.
So much about it is so perfect. Like, the fact that he's like, where Al at? First of all, he's like, let me just try and make sure somebody else does it. And then he's scared of pigeons. He's not feeding no fucking lions. I'm scared of pigeons. I just love it.
They don't bite. People's stuff.
They kill. That's white people's stuff. You feed them lions.
You feed them lions.
So shout out to that.
Was it Cardi B? Ever since I took them etiquette classes, I want to do some white people activities. Feeding lions.
Feeding lions. Apparently. Apparently. Yes. TV movies. The Grindr was renewed for a second season, which I'm super excited about. We love that show.
Yes, so funny.
So great, and I'm excited for it. I feel like this second half of the season, like, they really dialed in on the formula for the show, and it's almost like watching two different shows.
It's meta. It's so
and
meta.
This week was extremely meta. It was so fun. I mean, we had to rewind several times because we were laughing so hard we like missed the next joke. So funny.
And I really like so the two main leads, Rob and Fred Savage are great, and Fred's really funny.
The straight man is
he's
the ultimate.
Really funny.
The ultimate.
But the blonde woman that plays his wife, was she on that movie, the TV show that was the Office with the weird scientist? One was played by the black guy, another white guy. She was in that.
No, I don't think she was on that. That was Allison Anders, but she was on.
She wasn't.
It's
Joey.
Always Sunny. She's the waitress.
She's the waitress,
and she's also Charlie's wife in real life. But
correct.
Whatever.
She's very funny. So the show's, I think, very very meta and good. Someone on Twitter that I've engaged with a couple times, and sometimes like not so good and sometimes is better, but asked a question about you know, like, because this is on Fox, like, you know, what does that mean? And I was like, you know,
Fox.
Yeah, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, I'm not gonna, you know, bother with like Fox is good, Fox is bad. Like, in the grand scheme of things, in my opinion, my watching a show or not watching a show is gonna make no difference in terms of, like, you know.
I mean, Fox is no better than Comcast, which owns NBC, or Viacom.
That's the real answer.
CBS.
Watch TV. You're watching TV.
You're not watching. Then don't watch anything. Then, like, the fuck. And I literally, like, I'm not even going to get into a comment, especially when we're talking about network TV. It's ridiculous, but what have you. Anyways, we're excited about that. And if you haven't already watched it, please, you can watch it on demand this first season. So you'll be caught up for season two next year. I'm so excited. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season is coming to an end quickly.
Man, that's so good.
The Kree were on this week. Obviously, they do such a good job of bringing, you know, these larger ideas into the show that we then get to experience in movie, which we're going to go see literally right after we're done. Right
45
now.
45 minutes.
Very excited. And so that brings us to our last thing, was Captain America Civil War. I have been extremely diligent about not watching anything except for the one long preview they did, that or trailer. That's the only thing I've watched. I have, every time it comes on, I'm like, fast forward, or covering my ears, or running out. I don't want it ruined. I cannot wait. I will say that Chris Fett from Insanity Check did go see it 2 days ago. You know, he's a movie reviewer, movie trailer reviews. Check them out, MTRnetwork.com, movietrailerreviews.net. And he said it was like beyond.
I'm sure.
Like,
I'm sure.
Beyond.
I can't wait.
What's your grade?
He
literally tweeted back, goes, come on, Leslie. You know.
Stop.
Like,
you know, to me, the thing with Captain America and just Marvel in general, like, you can really see their getting their feet wet. Like, I think it was smart to start with the Iron Man, you know, I think that was the easiest to do in terms of a story.
It was very smart. Not just easy to do, but I think it was like a big enough character in terms of the MCU, the universe, but small enough that a lot of people didn't know about Iron Man.
Yeah.
So it allowed, you were able to really create the definitive identity for a character in the modern lexicon and use that as the anchor. It's fucking brilliant.
Well, but I remember when we, we've seen all of them, but when the first Captain America came out, of all the Avenger character, of all the Marvel comic universe origin stories, I thought that was like the worst movie. I thought it was the weakest of the origin stories. Maybe like there's a Wolverine, it's not the same universe, but anyway, given that I thought it was a weak origin story, when they had the next one, I was like, oh, I don't really know. And by now we'd already seen like some Avengers stuff, like we're a little bit more excited about it. And then Winter Soldier was like, are you fucking kidding me? Come on. And it was so like, they wrote into it like very modern. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't describe it. But
well,
like,
I think that to me, like, and that's why I liked that show, because, you know, the character of Captain America is a man out of time. And so I think that origin story was about giving us the viewer, because again, Marvel's so smart about this longer view of things, knowing they were going to get to Avengers and all these other things. You have this man out of time that is then able to be understood by the viewer because we have this context of him in his own time. And, you know, I am fairly certain that aspect will play out in the movie in Civil Wars. Like, that's the big, you know, dichotomy, the difference between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers.
But like, so, what I mean, like, but even more modern, like I would not be surprised if the movie has elements of like protest, Black Lives Matter, like, you know, Islamophobia. There's going to be things that are very au courant on a almost a meta level if they don't come out and say those words exactly.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, I get it. This is, you know, an analogy to this or that. But I think they haven't had a flop in my mind almost yet.
Well, anyway,
ain't going to be tonight.
Yeah, it's not.
Ain't going to be Civil War. Who are we podcasting for? I've been listening to a lot of Dat T.
Oh,
I know,
yeah.
I know we stand for them
we
before.
We can stand for them again. They're so good.
I want to just say, what's if you guys tea? Don't listen to What's the Tea,
you should.
It's a great show.
So good.
I'll just say, if you like, sort of, people, somebody said like they like our kind of like, you know, interchange and sort of our back and forth and our, you know, because we've been married for a long time. They have a equal, it's almost like they're married, right? They've been friends for a very long time or a good long time, but they're, their show's terrific, but it was something this week, and I don't know which episode it was, but Reggie, someone wrote into the show and was maybe complaining about R to the Edgy making using a word, I guess the lesbian in a certain way, and not necessarily in the way that they interpret it. And her defense of R to the Edgy, it almost like I almost got choked up. I really was like sitting listening to a podcast.
It was
like,
really
was not that it was like that big a deal, but it was a moment where you could see two friends on a show and they're recording it, and one's reading, you know, some feedback that's, you know, taking umbrage with their actions, and then the other just saying like, hey, listen, that's not how I think. That's not what I think. Anyone that knows you doesn't think that.
I think beyond that, I think what I got really, and this is what made it really moving to me, is that, you know, they and we do the same thing. You know, our podcast is ours. It's a space that we've created, and we have, you know, decided to say the things we want to say, speak how we normally speak, talk about the topics that are important to us and the way that we speak about them to each other, because we're here and we're talking to each other. And I think that for me, that's what was really moving about it, is that, you know, her and Reggie, like, they're friends. This podcasting is not a reason that they're friends. It's an extension of their friendship.
No, and the podcast was like, well, we're in separate cities and we're talking on the phone for an hour weekly anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Yeah, you're right. But
so I think it was like, to me, it was more about, you know, people have a lot of, you know, try to take a lot of ownership of you just because you might have some things that you put out publicly. But especially with podcasting, like, we, like, when you're trying to tone police someone on their own podcast, like, get the fuck out of here. Like, for real, get the fuck out of here. Don't do that. You can say you disagree with something, but don't try and be condescending and have like a wagging finger tone with somebody on their own platform. Like, you
don't get to do that.
You know what you can do? Not fucking listen.
Yeah, turn the dial.
And that's really like at the heart of it. Like, if you don't like the way we talk or you don't like the things that we say, you have every right to not listen. So anyways, and that's not to say that, you know, you can't write in and say that you have a difference of opinion or you think something differently than we do, but this idea of trying to control what podcasters say, how they say it, and I mean, I think people a lot of times forget that podcasters are just regular people too, not us, because we're nobodies.
Yeah, but, you know, regular people.
No, I am regular people. I meant not us in the, like, nobody gives a shit about our podcast, so then nobody's like worried about what we're saying. But, you know, people that have really popular podcasts, there's just like idea that they're not regular, they're not real people, and so you can say whatever you want to them just because they have decided to make a very small portion of their life public and in a podcast format. And so anyways, we love them. Make sure you follow them on Twitter. They're at Good Day Saints, and just search What's the TEA on any of your podcasts.
And I would say, even as a medium, it's not, you know, like, not that it's hard, because it's not, like, anyone can make a podcast, but obviously it's not something that everyone does successfully. And then the, like, at least for me, I can't speak of anyone else, but in my doing this show, it started with me trying to, like, write down notes, and I was going to, like, write what I was going to say, and, like, that didn't work at all. Like, you're trying to, like, you're reading, like, a quasi-script, like, that doesn't work at all. And then I cut, like, maybe condensed it into, like, bullet points and thoughts, and that still didn't work. So I'm like, you know what, fuck it. I'll just, you know, like, for me, this is what works, but it's not a simple thing. You know, no. So, like, if I say something that's ableist, or I do this or that, that's maybe not, like, I'm not perfect. I'm human. I'm going to, you know, and on this medium, like, shooting from the hip, that's, you know, I'm not like a polished news professional. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a lot to ask.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Anyways, that's it, I think.
Oh, man, I don't have my Jingle Pass not set up yet.
Oh, no. We can't hear ZZ.
I can get it. Hold on. I just got to add the, is it good night, everybody? What is it?
Yeah, it is.
Good night, everybody.
High five. Okay, I'm just gonna save it.
Yeah, let's.